I love getting boxes in the mail. Even though it's usually me who's ordered and paid for whatever's in the box, I still love it. My dogs love it too. That's right, my dogs, because once a month, they get a special box from a company called BarkBox. And inside that box are treats and toys just for them. And they love both. You can get a BarkBox for your dogs too through a monthly subscription when you go to BarkBox.com/GreyhoundNJ. And when you do this and are a first-time customer of BarkBox, they will donate $25 to Greyhound Friends of New Jersey, helping us to get more greyhounds into homes. Check them out. It's BarkBox.com/GreyhoundNJ. Welcome to About Greyhounds, the podcast about greyhounds. This is Jacqueline Howard of Greyhound Friends of New Jersey. I'm sure everyone out there knows by now that I love greyhounds. That's kind of obvious. And many of you know that I'm a writer by day, so I get especially excited when I come across a book that features a greyhound, especially nonfiction. Today, I'm quite honored to welcome to the show author Suzanne E. Burke. She won gold and silver medals in the 2015 Global eBook Awards and also won 3 gold medals in the 2016 Global eBook Awards. Suzanne has written 3 books, each with a greyhound as a main character. They are absolutely delightful. Welcome to About Greyhounds, Suzanne.
Thank you, Jacqueline. I am thrilled to be here today with you.
Great. Suzanne, I'm excited to talk to you about your 3 books, but before we get into them, I wanted to talk to you about greyhounds. When did you adopt your first greyhounds?
Well, Jacqueline, this is an interesting story. There were 2 greyhounds that graced past me on 2 different occasions back around 2000. One of the greyhounds' name was Zeus. I'll never forget how graceful they appeared and thought, you know, one day I'd like to own one of these. Not knowing anything about them, the day came about 2 years later when I was ready to adopt. I was actually going to go to a shelter and adopt a dog, but I remembered those greyhounds. So I started researching their characteristics and found their history was incredible, that, you know, they went back 6,000 years. I'm a huge history buff, and so I was really intrigued by this breed. So I researched further. I found the Greyhound Adoption League of Texas's website and perused all the available greyhounds. There was a 7-year-old black boy named Houston, whose photo I just fell in love with. He was on the injured reserve list, so he wasn't available and was being rehabilitated for, I believe it was heartworms at the time. He was also in Austin, Texas, about 3 hours away. But it then turned my attention to a young female named Allie, who had just retired from racing. You see, she only ran 3 races, so I'm sure she knew that she was a princess and racing wasn't for her. So I ended up adopting her, and I was smitten right away with her and this breed. And then I jumped into volunteering for golf, so I really feel like I had found my calling with these greyhounds. But you didn't think I forgot about Houston, did you? Every month to see when he would appear on golf's available for adoption webpage, and when he did, I begged to foster him. I failed fostering after 1 short week, so I just knew that we were meant to be together. He was a, you know, a rough and tumble gray who had been in and out of homes and, through no fault of his own, you know, had been returned. But he had overcome tick diseases and heartworm infections, and to me, he was a miracle boy. So he really was my first heart boy.
Oh, wow. That's great. And I really applaud you. It sounds like he had some special needs, and he was an older dog. And I know that a lot of people steer away from those dogs, but they end up really being special for so many reasons. So I'm so glad. It's a beautiful story. Thanks for sharing that, Suzanne.
Yeah.
And I have to tell you, you said, I believe, Ali. I am right now fostering a gorgeous black greyhound named Ali Oxenfree that I call Ali. So, so that's funny. Nice little coincidence.
That's great.
You also mentioned the Greyhound Adoption League of Texas. I am a big fan of that group. I became aware of them as Twitter because I'm the Twitter feed writer and manager for Greyhound Friends of New Jersey, and they are very active on Twitter, so we'll have exchanges here and there. I know they do a lot of great work, not just with greyhounds, but lurchers too. And I know you've been volunteering with them for over 15 years, so congratulations on that. What type of volunteer work do you do with them?
Over the past 15 years, I have volunteered in many capacities with them, as a membership coordinator, coordinator of lost greyhounds, fostering and caring for the incoming greys that come in off the tracks.
Wow. Okay. Great. So you're pretty busy with them and everything else that you have on your plate. So tell me what or who inspired the recurring character in your books, Logan?
Well, a few years ago, after I adopted Allie and Houston, I was very involved with lost greyhounds for Galt. Here and there, greys would escape through gates, and we put together a process to help owners find their greys. It was probably, I'd say, the most rewarding thing I did outside of fostering for them. One day, I received a call that Sam, a greyhound who had been returned from his adoptive home after escaping, was returned to his original foster home.
Oh, wow.
But he wouldn't believe this. He escaped 1 week later through an open gate.
Oh, my gosh, Houdini.
So he was a Houdini. He was a, you'll learn his characters in the books. But but this was a wrenching six-week event where Sam was like finding a needle in a haystack. We posted flyers around this lake community where he had escaped and where there were sightings. So we organized weekend greyhound walks to make people aware of our lost Sam, and we were out there every evening. We even set up a humane trap out there, and we would replenish the food every morning and every night. And, of course, we caught some very interesting critters in there through that several-week period that we did that.
Oh, my gosh.
But Sam was a beautiful, huge, fawn boy who I had met months earlier before he got adopted at a Galt meet and greet, and I remembered his positive, calm spirit. So when he escaped, and over that six-week period he was lost, I had formed this emotional bond with him. I can't explain it any better than that. I spent evenings driving an hour to the lake community searching for him and with other volunteers. But leads began to dry up around week five, I would say, and the volunteers became really weary of ever finding him. But there were some of us volunteers that, you know, we just didn't give up. We felt he was out there. Then one evening, as I was supposed to drive out to the lake to help replenish the food in the trap, I told the volunteer I was scheduled to meet, that I couldn't come. I was going to school and working full-time, and I was just, you know, I had a lot going on. But as I drove home from work that evening, I said a prayer to please lift this burden from our shoulders. And following that prayer, I felt this warm rush of energy pass through my body and got the strong impression to call this volunteer back to agree to meet her. And her name was Sammy Conway, and so when I met her, we would always bring our greyhounds out, and so we walked the greyhounds after we had replenished the trap, and then we sat on this park bench in front of the lake. So as the sun was setting over the lake, there was cloud cover, and the most amazing image in the clouds caught our attention. We both saw it, and it was an image of a greyhound's head with its distinct needle nose and relaxed ears.
Wow.
We both discussed the image and wondered, you know, what's the meaning of this? And Sammy remarked, she said that she thought it meant that we would find Sam soon. So the next day, as I drove around some ponds that are in the area where I worked, it was something I did every day, sort of praying and kind of calmed me down over the situation. I received a phone call from Sammy screaming in my ear. She goes, "We found Sam! We found Sam!" And I was like, "Where?" And she said, he was on a ranch 30 miles south from where he disappeared.
Oh, my gosh.
Yeah, so Sam was returned to Galt. He, of course, had to go directly to the vet to get medically checked out. He was fine. And then I begged Galt to foster him. Like I said, I had formed this bond, and I felt like that, you know, he would be really loved in our home, and I just wanted to, you know, make sure that it was going to work out. But I adopted him just a day later.
Oh, my gosh.
and renamed him Logan.
Okay.
So during this time, you know, I made a vow to him that I would write his story one day from his perspective.
Right.
So 7 years later, at the age of 12, he was 5 years old when I adopted him. 7 years later, at age 12, I knew I had to complete this project before he left this earth. So with Logan and the other greyhounds I had adopted over that seven-year period, I took a sabbatical from work to write the story. I mean, it was that important to me to leave work, and I left for about 8 months to do this.
Huh.
And I have to tell you, it was the most rewarding time of my life.
Well, congratulations on that. And the end product, I will say, is such a great read and such a beautiful story. So kudos to you for taking that sabbatical and putting pen to paper or hands to keyboard, whichever it was, and bringing his story to light and bringing that story to light. I'm going to go a little bit off topic. You said something that really piqued my interest. You said that you had worked with Galt on their process for finding lost greyhounds. Can you talk a little bit about that?
Yes. So we put a process together to where we had a particular phone number that we would post on flyers. And it was a phone number that went directly to one particular volunteer. And we had a checklist of things to do, you know, with a lost greyhound. And we would send that to the owner of that lost greyhound. So they would get involved in it, and then we would put together a volunteer group, and this would happen very immediately, and we would put together a volunteer group that would go out and help this owner post flyers everywhere. And then from there, you know, we would work, we would do walks with the greyhounds. I will tell you that almost all the greyhounds that were lost, we found them, and we found them within several days. There were only a few where they were like Logan, where they were gone for, you know, a period of time, but we found them eventually.
That's...
And I think a lot of that has to do with immediately making people in the community aware of this lost dog. And one of the best ways to do that is to post flyers up with the picture of the dog right away.
Yeah, I think you hit the nail on the head there. We operate very similar to that process when a dog gets lost. There's a phone number to call, which is Linda Lyman, who's the president of our organization. She gets the phone call, and bam, it's all over social media. There is an army of people that descend on that neighborhood with flyers, you know, that we've sent out to, you know, Staples or Kinko's or wherever it is that's in that area where people can go and grab them and start putting them up. You're absolutely right. So that sounds like a great program that you guys instituted. And
yeah, I mean, we actually will create the flyer for the owner and then email it to them.
Wow. And back to Logan, how did he get to the ranch? Like, did he actually take that journey himself?
It's a crazy story. And, you know, in his story, there's an epilogue. And the epilogue tells the true story behind his story, because the book is written in his perspective, everything that he went through, and his belief that he was going to find that forever home, and he was going to work to, you know, to change his thought patterns to get to that home. And it's a crazy, twisty story where he had changed hands multiple times between people who had found him after only 4 days of being out, by the way.
Wow.
And he changed hands, I think, three times. and ended up with a police chief who owned a ranch down 30 miles south of Dallas.
Oh, wow. So he was in good hands, at least, with the police chief.
Well, he was in good hands, but, you know, I was able to interview him and the lady who eventually, you know, found him on that ranch. And I'm not going to tell any too much more about the story because you'll read about it in
That's
the epilogue.
Right.
But it is a very interesting story.
That's right. You're keeping us on the edge of our seats, as you should. As you should.
Of course.
So your main audience for your books is kids. But I must say, adults must surely enjoy your books, too. I know I did. So, do you find that you have an adult audience, too?
Yeah, you know, I do. What I found most amazing was this audience of adults I had really never considered who would love this story. I received so many positive comments about the book, and that year, you know, I appeared on 4 morning talk shows and completed a multitude of radio talk shows. So the book really became a success when it was launched. And it was just, you know, I think through Facebook probably is really where it grew, and the audience, you know, the audience were aware of this book, and that's how it was able to grow like it did.
Right. And I'll tell you, I have all 3 of your books, and I gave them very quick reads in between work and everything else, and I really enjoy them. And I have 2 sons that are going to be reading them next, and I know my husband wants to read them as well. So you have a whole family of fans here in New Jersey who really enjoyed the books. So in your books, you'll include projects for young readers, and a couple of them include historical chapters. What made you decide to include educational elements in your books?
Well, you know, Jacqueline, I did a lot of research on children's books before I started to write Logan's story, and I found first chapter books to be the most interesting.
Yeah.
Children are moving from the picture books and, you know, into these first chapter books. And Logan's story, although short by a novel's comparison, was too rich for a children's picture book.
Mm.
I interviewed elementary age children to find out what characteristics made a great first chapter book. What children told me were short chapters with adventure and excitement and illustrations to guide the story.
Mm.
So I had my format. I added projects at the end to engage children in the story and a vocabulary list of new words that they learned through reading the books.
Okay, great. So let's talk about your latest title, The Rise of the Phoenix. I'm very familiar with the phoenix of Greek mythology. He's the bird that rises from the ashes, and that's really summarizing Phoenix's story. I want to also add that I am the proud mom of a kitten that the fire department rescued from a burning building. So, of course, I named him Phoenix. I also want to mention... Sorry?
That is great. I love that.
Yeah. Well, I'll tell you, the rescue group that took him and his siblings, they were only a couple of days old, actually. They named all of the kittens in the litter some kind of fire name. And his name was Sparky. And I wasn't really liking Sparky. I'm like, no. He needs a better name than Sparky. He's, you know, he's a cool cat. So I named him, you know, Phoenix. I came up with, and it really fits him. He's funny. When he's bad, I call him Fifi because he doesn't like that.
Fifi, you know, it's funny. I love that you have this cat named Phoenix. Phoenix was the name of Logan's cousin who I adopted from a track in Phoenix, Arizona.
Oh my gosh.
He had so many of Logan's attributes. He was a fawn. He was big. He was tall. You know, I lost Logan to bone cancer the same year that I published his story and was in the middle of writing Logan and the Mystical Collar.
Wow.
So it was fitting for me to include Phoenix's name in this book.
Right.
And he really was very similar to, I think, to Logan in many ways.
Oh, wow. So Phoenix has a very special meaning for you.
Yes.
Yeah. One other thing I want to mention is that when it comes to Greek mythology, greyhounds are often mentioned. Some of these greyhounds have actually been featured in a few of our previous About Greyhound episodes, and we have another one in the works that also include another greyhound. I know I'm seriously digressing, so let's get back to the book, The Rise of the Phoenix. Logan, the greyhound in the story, of course, comes across the 500-year-old mystery of the phoenix. He also meets a greyhound friend. So here's my question, or at least my first one on this. How did you come up with the idea for this story?
I on a beach in California while on vacation.
Nice.
That's all I could say. I wove it over a year's time, and it finally came together. It's just amazing how my stories come together. I can't explain it. There are things that occur that then, in my life that I say, oh, this would be really good in the book. And so that's how my stories come together. I can't explain it any better than that. I mean, one of the things that's in The Rise of the Phoenix is the Book of Secrets. Mm. Well, I was in a store one day, and I went to look in this one section, and I saw the Book of Secrets. And it was just an empty book. And I bought that book because I said, oh, this is a really good idea. Okay, so I'm going to have a book of secrets in this book. And so things like that, I think, occur as I'm thinking of ideas of how I'm going to weave a story.
Sure.
And, the fun thing I added to the back of that book, and even the second book, Logan and the Mystical Collar, was a profile of each character in the story. Because Logan is not the only character. There are other greyhound characters. And so what I started doing was adding, the character's profile, their racing history, and how they came to be adopted. So this particular story included quite a few characters of friends, greyhounds, who I had formed friendships with over the years, with my readers mostly through Facebook.
Oh, wow.
So I really just love this book for that reason, because it is a compilation of various greyhound characters in real life and their personalities and their quirks.
Right. And I know in that book there is a character named Tess. So is she based on a specific greyhound, or is she more of a composite?
She is. Lori and Dallas Nelbard, who they're up in the Northeast somewhere. But they had a greyhound named Tess. Now, she was still alive at the time I was writing this book. And, I said to her one day, I said, how would you feel about me adding Tess as a character in this story? She said, oh, this would be great. And so we sort of worked together on ideas. She read my manuscript. It was just such a great thing to work together with somebody that I still have never met in person, but had this, really great friendship over Facebook.
Right.
And Tess, Logan, he was a curious greyhound. He always was in real life. So he does this time travel to medieval Europe to help solve the mystery of an evil blackness that's plaguing the countryside. So he meets Tess in the forest on his way to check out a castle that he just finds mesmerizing. One thing you'll learn is that he is just always wanting to check out buildings. So what he doesn't know is that Tess is a royal greyhound who lives in that castle. But what adds to the adventure is a greyhound wizard and a dragon who lives in the forest and is feared by all the kingdom's people. But together, these greyhounds and this dragon form a bond to work through the problem of saving the kingdom from peril from this evil black mist. So the historical aspect of the story is woven around King Hywel, who was the first king on record to enact a law to protect the greyhound. And this is true history.
Right.
But there's plenty of adventure and intrigue, and readers learn about the flawed characters that have a lot to learn about prejudice and fear and false judgment. So those are some key elements characteristics around some of these characters.
Right. And without giving away too much, what lesson can we learn from Logan's experience in that book?
There are there are a lot of questions in the back of The Rise of the Phoenix for children. And one of the questions I think I like the most is, you know, how will you use what you learned in this story to possibly change how you treat people and animals?
Okay, great. So, Suzanne, I'm going to switch gears on you a little bit and ask you about your second book, and you had mentioned it earlier, Logan and the Mystical Collar. I have to tell you, I love time travel stories. In this book, Logan finds himself in Egypt, ancient Egypt, that is. What kind of research did you need to do to represent this time and place in an authentic way?
Well, again, you know, as you've mentioned, greyhounds, they held really great prominence in ancient Egypt. So since this was an earlier historical period, I started Logan's adventure stories with that period. I've always been fascinated with ancient Egypt, especially Cleopatra. So I knew I wanted to weave an adventure story around her, but I wasn't sure at what period of her life. So through the research that I did on her, I didn't really see a lot about her earlier life before she became a pharaoh. So I decided to improvise a little and create some fiction and really picked up on her teenage life before she became a pharaoh.
Ah, okay. So in this book, Logan has a nemesis, Zeus. Would you share how Zeus became Logan's enemy?
Yeah, so the character Zeus was based on a 90-pound large black greyhound who I adopted. His name was Crydale. He was young and full of exuberance, but he constantly challenged Logan. He would do this hilarious dance in the yard with Logan like he was a boxer. He was always dancing around Logan and trying to charge him. So in essence, Dale was a bully. You know, he wanted to be the pack lead because of his size, but Logan would stand his ground and just look at him, you know, look at this big goofy greyhound, waste all his energy dancing around him. And I think what Logan taught Dale, it was his calm assertiveness, and it was amazing to see the positive impact Logan had on him. I named this character Zeus after the first greyhound that I saw many years back who had escaped from his yard. And I helped Zeus back to his family. So you see, Zeus in this story really has most to do with the very first greyhound that I ever saw.
Wow, okay. And Zeus, who you talked about at the very beginning of this episode.
Yeah.
That's great. And the way you're talking about Logan now with that calm assertiveness, it almost reminds me of Steve McQueen. Like, I'm imagining Logan as the Steve McQueen of Greyhounds.
He'd be a perfect Steve McQueen, yes.
So in this book, again, there's also some educational exercises. Can you talk about some of those?
I think the most favorite educational exercise in this book was to teach children to write their own name in hieroglyphics. And they would do this through researching it on the internet. I thought that this would be a really fun exercise for children to be able to, you know, put their name in and then see how it converted into hieroglyphics.
So, Suzanne, as you can tell, I'm working backward. Your first book is titled Logan's Secret. What can you tell us without spoiling the story as far as a synopsis of this book?
Okay. Well, as I mentioned earlier, Logan's story started with his true life story of being a racing greyhound. You know, he has a vision of retired life. He watches as his racing friends retire and hears about the luxuries of retirement. So he really wants that more than anything. And one day he decides to take an action that will speed up this retirement. Logan then is retired to Galt in Dallas. From there, he goes through many trials to reach his forever home. So it is based on a true story. It's written, though, through his eyes, from his perspective. I think that's what makes it unique, and it's his perspective that captures the attention of children. They really seem to relate to this book.
Right, and you know what, Suzanne? I think adults relate to this too. I mean, so many of us, especially those of us with greyhounds, I don't think we put ourselves in our dog's heads. What were they thinking? So it's really an interesting and unique perspective to take on racing greyhounds and what they might be thinking with all these changes around them. And I also want to say, like Logan, I often see people retiring and going off to luxurious rest. and I want to do that too. But again, I digress. This isn't about me. So, as with the other two titles, would you share one of the educational projects you laid out in this book?
Yes, one project is asking the children to write their life story. You know, how does it start and what they want to do in their lifetime?
Great.
And I think this is such an important exercise for parents to pay attention to so they can understand more about their child. You know, children are so creative at this age, you know, between the ages of, say, 6 and 10, well, and then on up, of course. But during those years, they are just so incredibly creative. Mm. And I think that particular project, I believe a parent would be really excited to see, you know, what does their children come up with and what do they want to experience?
Right. Right. Exactly. And it's such a good point you make, like about the parents seeing what it is that their child has written there for that project,
mm-hmm.
because it really is, again, an interesting perspective. I'm a parent, and I know that sometimes I just get caught up in my own head and perspectives that I'm not thinking too much about, well, how does this look to them? You know, whatever this is, you know. Yeah, so.
And it's amazing, you know, once a child reads this book, they have the most interesting questions.
Suzanne, I know that you're often invited to speak to students at schools about your books and greyhounds in general. What's your approach to this when you speak to the kids?
So the children will have already read the book in class, and then I follow up by doing a short presentation on creative writing.
Okay.
To really inspire young children about the ideas that they could use to write their own short story. And kids love it, and they have lots of stories to share as a result. We then have a question and answer segment for the children to ask questions about what they learned in Logan's Secret.
I know that you'll bring a greyhound along with you when you're speaking. How do they react to a real, live, former racing greyhound?
When you have 100 kids come in from, you know, class, and they're all being marched down the hall, and they come into, you know, a library or you know, wherever they're going to hear this or see this presentation, and they see that greyhound, oh, my gosh, they just go, and they're just so excited to see this dog. You know, they read about this dog. They read all about, you know, the racing part of it and everything he went through, and then they see this greyhound. And they are just so incredibly excited about it.
Well, you just gave me chills. Yeah, I can see that. It's the same, you know, I have kids, they're 12 and 16. And even now, like more with my 12-year-old than my 16-year-old, when their friends come over and see these dogs, you know, and they hear about them from my sons, because my sons are always out there also being champions for greyhounds. So when they meet one in person, they say, wow, and they're just so fascinated. And the same, you know, we do meet and greets, I'm sure, just as Galt does. And when kids are there, it's the first time they're seeing a greyhound. They've all seen them on the sides of buses. But to see one in person is like, wow, because I may be biased, but they're stunning dogs. And they have
a
very commanding presence about them, especially because they are mostly, most of them, I should say, are so calm, cool, and collected that, you know, and you don't necessarily expect that out of a dog of that size. So yeah, it's really something when a child sees a greyhound for the first time, and after having read Logan's Secret and then to meet him in person, I can imagine. Like, it must have given you goosebumps every time, you know, to see.
Yeah, it's funny because I think what they're so mesmerized with is the dog's physique and the dog's muscle and, yeah. and, you know, how powerful this dog is. And they're in awe.
Right, right. Oh, that's so great. So what are some of the more memorable questions students have asked you about greyhounds?
This is the most popular one. It's how or why does a greyhound have to wear a muzzle when it races?
Mm.
So I have to explain, and I always bring a muzzle with me, and I'll put it on the greyhound, and I'll explain, you know, the reason why is because they are so fast, and they're very competitive, and, you know, when they're racing, they might, you know, try to nip one of, you know, each other just, you know, so they can get ahead, and this protects their skin.
Sure. Sure.
And then I think one of the other questions I get, this one comes up all the time, is how tall are the greyhounds? Or how tall can they get? They're just so interested in that. And, you know, I wanted to share one quick story that occurred during a school visit that I had recently. It was about a little girl, and she was really deathly afraid of dogs. In fact, she sat at the very back of this group of 100 kids. But her teacher and her came up to me after the presentation, and she, you know, she had something to tell me. The teacher said, go ahead, tell her. And so she said, I have to tell you that I have always been so afraid of dogs. She goes, but after reading Logan's Secret, I now understand more about the dog, and now I'm not as afraid of the dog.
Wow.
The cutest thing to hear her say this, and that I had never even imagined that a book would help a child become less afraid of a dog.
Wow. And as a writer, that must have floored you to know that you had that
it
kind
did.
Of impact.
I mean, that in itself was worth writing the book.
Wow.
Have an impact like that.
You gave me chills again. So that's great. And what a sweet girl to share that with you. That how the experience of your book really impacted her in a positive way. That's great.
You know, another fun thing I did is they really liked the presentation so much, and one of the elementary schools had a writing club. And they invited me to come to their writing club meeting with the children. They were all, I think, probably about 9, 10 years old. And they were all writing their own stories. And so I got to spend time with them and show them how I craft my stories or how I design my stories. I use mind mapping to do it. And so I was able to show them how I create my characters using mind mapping and it helps me to create the different scenarios and chapters and exactly how I want to form this book. And they were in awe of that too. They would just thought, oh my God, I'm going to use that going forward, writing my stories. But it was the most lovely time I had with these children.
Right. And what a way to influence young writers or to even ignite the flame for a child who's thinking, well, when I grow up, maybe I'll be a writer. You know, that's great.
Right.
I mean, yeah, we need more writers.
Yeah.
So if a school would like to invite you to speak, where can they get information?
So they would go to greyhoundstories.com. There's a tab on there called school program.
Okay.
And it's here that the teachers can learn about how the program works and how to contact me and set up a visit and presentation for their classes.
And geographically, where would you be available to do that? I imagine not New Jersey.
I do it locally here in Texas, but, you know, if the school wants to fly me out,
yep.
I would be happy to do it. And I would probably work with one of the local adoption groups to get a greyhound for that for that event.
Right.
I've done that with a couple of morning talk shows that I've done where I traveled to Biloxi, to Richmond, that's my hometown, to do morning talk shows. And I actually linked up with adoption groups there, and they lent me a Greyhound that looked sort of like Logan so I could carry them on set.
Oh, wow. Well, you know, if you ever are in New Jersey or New York or the Pennsylvania area, you call me. We'll get you a Greyhound.
I will do it.
And just to mention to the audience, I will be putting the link to Suzanne's website in the show notes of this episode. So don't worry about writing that down. Suzanne, can we expect to see another adventure for Logan in the near future?
Jacqueline, I'm sure there's another Logan adventure on the horizon. However, I am currently working on a new story that surrounds a Greyhound named Odin. He's a Greyhound from Ireland who comes to the United States in the late 1800s to help the Native Americans defeat George Custer at Little Bighorn.
Oh, wow. Well, you know, it's funny, Suzanne. We actually have an episode about George Custer in the About Greyhounds podcast library.
Oh, really?
Yeah, so that'll be great.
Oh, I have to go watch that.
Yeah,
listen to it, rather.
It's because Custer, as I'm sure you know, had many Greyhounds that he traveled around with. So it's
and you know, he used them for sighting the Native Americans.
No, actually, I didn't know that. I didn't find that in my research, so that's pretty interesting. Yeah,
I read that, and so this story is going to kind of switch it around a little bit to where this family comes with Odin and another Greyhound to the United States because they're supposed to be they have friends that live out in the Midwest, and you know, they encourage this Irish family to come and start their life, you know, in the United States.
Sure.
And so they bring these two Greyhounds because they're going to, you know, breed these Greyhounds because that's what they did over in Ireland. But what happens is they end up getting kidnapped by the Indians.
So oh, my gosh.
The Indians, then, you know, they become friends with the Indians, and then they teach the Indians about the Greyhound. And so that's sort of how all that, sort of like a switch about.
Right. Yeah, interesting. That is great. And I hope you can join us on About Greyhounds when that book is published. I would love to talk to you about it.
Oh, sure. I'm in the writing stage right now, so.
Great. Great.
We'll get it done here. I don't know when it will be done. Obviously not until next year, but because it takes quite a bit to do a lot of the research.
Right. So. I highly recommend Suzanne's books, Logan's Secret, Logan and the Mystical Collar, and The Rise of the Phoenix. You can order them through Amazon, and I must say, with the holidays coming up, they'd make great gifts for kids and adults. Look in the show notes of this episode for direct links to these titles. And Suzanne, thank you so much for coming on the show and sharing your insights with us. And thank you for all you do for Greyhounds.
Thank you, Jacqueline. I really enjoyed this and appreciate the opportunity. And thanks again. And thanks to you for all the work that you do with Greyhound.
Well, thank you. Thank you for that, Suzanne. And for everybody else, until next week, this has been an episode of the About Greyhounds podcast. And I'm Jacqueline Howard of Greyhound Friends of New Jersey. Catch a new episode next week. I always enjoy talking to other writers. It's interesting to me to get their insights. So I hope you enjoyed listening to this conversation with Suzanne as much as I enjoyed having it. I'm very grateful to her for coming on the show. At Greyhound Friends of New Jersey, we are dedicated to finding loving homes for former racing greyhounds. Of course, and as I always say, this takes a lot of time, a lot of volunteers, and of course money. If you enjoyed this episode, or if you've been enjoying the series, please consider making a donation to Greyhound Friends of New Jersey and helping us to find homes for more greyhounds. You can click on the donate button in the show notes of this episode. Thanks for listening. Thank you.